Well, hello everybody. We are continuing now with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 46. And we are working in the sign Aries. And let's see what we have just completed. We are on page 99. And we are talking about a little reference the Tibetan made to the veiled planets, to hidden planets, Uranus or Vulcan. He can call Uranus hidden in a way, but there may be other hidden planets as well. And there is a discussion here about Uranus in relation to the creative hierarchies, transmitting energy in relation to the creative hierarchies. Uranus is the planet through which zodiacal energy flows in connection with the creative hierarchies upon our planet. Uranus has that manifesting power of both the first and seventh rays, and the creative hierarchies are monads working through form. Now we continue. In connection with Aries, which expresses or is the agent primarily of the first ray of will or power, the ray of the destroyer, it should be stated that first ray energy comes from the divine prototype in the Great Bear, that it becomes transmuted into the force and activity of the planetary logos of the first ray, and works out his triple activity under the guidance of three ruling planets, Mars, Mercury, and Uranus. Well, let's analyze this. Aries is primarily the agent and primarily expresses the first ray, but also expresses or transmits the seventh ray. The divine prototype in the Great Bear is probably the first star in the tail of the bear, which is Al-Kaid or Benet Nash. Let's see here, Al-Kaid and Benet N-A-S-C-H. I think that's the way it's spelled. That it becomes transmuted into force. So it begins as energy and becomes transmuted into force and activity of the planetary logos of the first ray. Now, okay, what is the planetary logos of the first ray? From a certain point of view, monadically, it would have to be considered Uranus. It is, but our planetary logos also has a first ray monad. The planetary logos of the first ray from the soul perspective would be Vulcan, and perhaps that is most important in our particular solar system. When we are speaking of Pluto's first ray, that first ray may be on the personality level because we are dealing with a non-sacred planet. And the Tibetan tends to, when he gives rays for non-sacred planets, they tend to be the personality ray, just as when speaking most frequently of the Earth, in terms of the third ray, it is the personality ray of the Earth. So, from the prototype of the Great Bear, there is a working out through the constellation Aries. Now, the whole Great Bear is itself probably to be considered a first ray constellation. So, in this case, Benet Nash, or Al-Kaid, may stand for the entire Great Bear. But there is a prototypical star, and as DK seems to be discussing it, it's in Esoteric Astrology, page 610, 610, he does seem to speak of one of the stars in the Great Bear, working through three major constellations, of which Aries is one. Okay. So whether it's from that particular star or in a larger way from the Great Bear as a whole, it descends to the planetary logoi and certainly reaches our Earth, an essentially first-rate planet. It is working out under his triple activity and works out under his triple activity under the guidance of three ruling planets, Mars, Mercury, and Uranus, all of them rulers of Aries. Okay, all rulers, sorry, of Aries. Okay, into the force and activity of the planetary locus of the first ray and works out as his triple activity under the guidance of three ruling planets. So another thing that may be said is that from the planetary logos of the first ray, whichever he may be considering that to be, emanates a triple activity which this planetary logos guides, and then this triple activity is working out under further guidance from three ruling planets, Aries, Mercury, and Uranus. You can see how much may be contained in such a statement here. It's deep, it's quite dense, and the information is deeply embedded. But we do at least have a connection from the Great Bear, one of the stars in the Great Bear, the constellation Aries, a planetary logos of the first ray, whether it's Uranus or Vulcan, and a kind of distribution of that force via Mars, Mercury, and Uranus. We have to leave for the moment the ascertainment of what may be the planetary logos of the first ray. And I've stated the reasons why both Uranus and Vulcan are good candidates for that, but why the Earth also has to be considered not as the planetary logos of the first ray, but a planetary logos of an eventually manifesting monadic first ray. Even though in this particular solar system, that first ray may be somewhat non-effective, occultly non-effective, because the Earth is a non-sacred planet. Okay, so the lines of transmission given on page 610 in diagram 3. Let's see, diagram 4, yeah. Okay, diagram 4 fills this in. Okay. We don't see a particular planetary locus of the first ray here, but we do see ray 1 passing through many different rulers. That much we do see. Okay. We are not given the what he means by the planetary logos of the first ray, but we imagine that the energy of the Great Bear along the first ray line will reach Aries first, the major distributor of the constellationally of the first ray, before it reaches the planetary logos of the first ray, and before it works out as a triple activity under the guidance of three other planets. So we have kind of a ray ruler involved here, a first ray ruler, which may be most probably Vulcan in terms of our present solar system, but Uranus cannot be dismissed. And from that first ray ruler, we have a triple modifying force of Mars, Mercury, and Uranus. Okay, Mars embodies sixth ray force. And I think we can say from or through its personality. Mars embodies sixth ray force, which leads to idealism, because the sixth ray is the ray of idealism, devotion and idealism, destructive fanaticism frequently, because there's plenty of first ray in Mars contributing to the fiery nature of the sixth ray, struggle, yes, strife, which is conflict, War, which is a non-harmonious engagement of contending forces. Effort, that's a positive thing. Unity through effort, we remember as one of the keynotes of Aries. And evolution or progress. So this is something about Mars, and we do need it to propel the life forward, even though it leads to many disharmonious, inharmonious, unpleasant situations. But it is eventually liberating for the soul. God's idea in Aries becomes the concrete plan in Capricorn. There's quite a difference between the originating idea and the specific plan worked out in terms of the five lower worlds or the three lower worlds. Always, Aries is the birthplace of ideas. An idea has an internal, non-formal structure, an ability to arrange matter. It has a relationship, an inherent relationship of energies, but they do not appear in the normal form, in normal form, as we can usually consider form in terms of the three lower worlds. God's idea in Aries, and maybe this is the idea of the planetary logos or the solar logos or any one of the gods within the one and only God, God's idea in Aries becomes the concrete plan in Capricorn, whether that objective is the full flower of the planetary life in all of its forms, because there is an idea in the mind of the planetary logos which does contain the full flowering, of the planetary life in all forms, or whether it's the ambition of a personality working out its own ideas, or rather thoughts, and ambitious worldly projects, or the spiritual aspiration, which is worldly ambition transmuted into its higher aspect of the initiate, who seeks to work out God's plans and make them his own. So here are three different ways in which the idea can take form, the original Aries idea. God's idea becomes the concrete plan in Capricorn. Okay, and then there are three objectives, all of them ultimately related to God's idea, though standing at different levels of evolutionary significance. One of the objectives can be the full flowering of the planetary life. That's a very large idea. Another objective can be very small. It's the ambition of a personality working out its own ideas, not really ideas from the Buddhic plane or beyond, but thoughts and ambitious worldly projects, or the initiate can have a certain objective towards which his spiritual aspiration tends, and that would be to work out God's plan in some small way, but at least it's not just the plan of the personality. Mars is important in all of this working out because there must be the effort to work things out, and that frequently involves strife and friction and contention and going against prevailing trends. Okay. In every case, and it's Mars that's being discussed here, Mars leads to the battleground of Scorpio, where the real crisis of which values shall prevail is fought out. We have discussed Mars as the exoteric ruler of Aries. It relates it thus to Scorpio, which is ruled by Mars in two respects, both the exoteric and esoteric. So the battleground of Scorpio is necessary if ideas are to take form. In other words, we must fight for the manifestation of our thoughts and, in some cases, actual ideas. Sometimes the word idea is used generically. It's roughly equivalent to the word thought or plans. But a true idea is an incorporeal being which has the power to shape and give shape and structure to amorphous matter. Okay, so we will have to fight, and the fight becomes deadly in Scorpio. Fight becomes deadly in Scorpio. Now, what DK is doing here is he's talking about how the different rulers of Aries actually function. So he's given us many key words for Mars with all of its friction, its heat, its warfare, its battle, its contention, its strife. The god of war. But now, Mercury. Mercury embodying the energy of the fourth ray, I would say, in its soul aspect, in the soul aspect of Mercury, the fourth ray is ruling, eventually carries the man around the wheel of life through the medium of conflict, enables him to achieve harmony. Embodying the energy of the fourth ray, eventually carries the man around the wheel of life and through the medium of conflict, enables him to achieve harmony. Let's remember that Mercury is the, quote, star of conflict, but also leads to harmony. We do not say this so much of Mars. Mars is more conflict without harmony, but Mars does lead to Mercury, in which the conflicts in which one engages are for the purpose of eventual harmony. So Mercury can lead to quite a bit of mental contention and debate and irresolution. And the contending of polar positions. But eventually Mercury has the illumination to see the points in common. The fourth ray will so often see points in common rather than points which divide, and can build those bridges which lead to harmony. So we have unity through effort, and the unity in Aries is oftentimes provided by Mercury. So unity through effort is very much, in a way, Mercury reached via Mars. Okay. Mercury illumines the mind and mediates between the soul and personality, being the messenger of the gods. What does the soul want within the personality? This is mediated and given by Mercury. And when we attempt to speak with the soul or the higher power or pray or in some way contact the higher of the two Geminian brothers, we use Mercury. Mercury offers up our petition, our thought, and we enter into dialogue. So with Mercury, it's always a two-way street. It's not just that which comes from the soul, but it's that which the personality returns to the soul, the personality's point of view, which indeed the higher power does consider. Mercury illumines the mind, brings many connections to the mind, connecting the contents of consciousness in a rational way. So I'll put that down here. Connecting the contents of consciousness in a rational manner, and mediates between the soul and personality, being the messenger of the gods. Gemini is also the messenger. What is a messenger? One who brings word, force, substance, some quantity or quality from one position to another. Always duality is implied, and location either in space or location in dimension. So carrying something from one position to another. This mediatorship of Mercury, one of the esoteric ruler of Aries, in the first instance produces an inevitable opposition between the pairs of opposites and a long, drawn-out conflict. In other words, when the personality finds out what the soul wants, there will be conflict. The personality will rebel. Personality will rebel and contend with the soul once the message is received at first. In the first instance, producing an inevitable opposition. In other words, once we know where the soul stands, we the disciple, and where the personality stands, a kind of battle will, for a time, eventuate until the two forces become more habituated to each other, and especially until the personality sees the value to itself of that which the soul suggests, because the soul message can also better the life of the personality. So it's interesting that mediatorship leads to conflict and finally to harmony. So let's put that down. Okay. Mediatorship of Mercury leads to conflict and eventually to harmony between the contending opposites. And then the fourth ray in its harmony aspect emerges. So it is harmony through conflict. So let's remember, when we begin talking to someone via Mercury, a debate may ensue until we reach a more harmonized position. This conflict finally works out into victory and the dispelling of illusion through the illumination of the lower mind. Well, yes, and that can happen somewhat in Aries. Illusion can be dispelled in Aries and also in Mercury when the Hydra is conquered. Okay. Because the Hydra is lifted up into the air of the Buddhic plane, which is ruled by Mercury, partially. So it is a very high mercurial function which dispels glamour and illusion in Scorpio. So in both of these Martian signs, there can be considerable progress towards the dispelling of illusion. The jungles of illusion are set on fire, or the jungles of experience are set on fire, and the path stands clear and free. Okay, Mercury and the Sun are one. Well, they're certainly close enough to each other, and they are both principles of illumination, although Mercury involves duality, which gives way into the unitary illumination which the Sun represents. The Sun represents the completely illumined non-dual sphere. Let's put that down. Sun as the completely illumined non-dual sphere. With Mercury and the Antikorana, there is always duality until the poles fuse and, in a way, Mercury becomes the Sun. This is what is called the contracting poles. As evolution proceeds, the poles contract, duality is overcome, and that state of consciousness, which can be called non-dual and is represented by the Sun, supervenes. Mercury and the Sun are one, we are frequently told in the occult literature, and sometimes we're told that Vulcan Mercury and the Sun are one. The functions of these other two planets merge into the greater function of the Sun. I think we see this particularly in the third decanate of Capricorn, which is ruled in a way by Mercury, but more authentically by Vulcan and the Sun, and which results in the great enlightenment or illumination of the third initiation. The Sun is the symbol of the Son of God, that's under the second aspect. The Son of God is the second ray aspect of God, who is the mediator between Father Spirit and Mother Matter. So Mercury, so the Sun in its second aspect is a mediator, and so is Mercury. God, the Son of Love, mediates between the law and will of the Father and the form-making tendencies of the Mother. Mercury, therefore, leads Aries to Virgo. See, we were talking about that before, via Mercury, which rules Aries and which rules Virgo. The two signs, Aries and Virgo, are connected. Mercury, therefore, leads Aries to Virgo. The idea must take form. It must come to birth and be refined and eventually perfected and made powerful and institutionalized in Capricorn. So, you know, the idea is not enough. It's got to be worked out through the other 11 signs of the zodiac in various ways. Mercury, therefore, leads Aries to Virgo, again speaking symbolically, where the idea or word of God, so the idea and the word are given equivalence here. The idea can be expressed as a sound. Let's say that. The idea expressed as a sound begins to take form. The gestation process in Virgo, and consequently the latent life in Aries, it's not life expressed, it's life potential, comes to the crisis of the birth hour, and the idea will be born within the material planes and actually emerge into matter via form. Prior to the birth of the Christ. Okay, the crisis of the birth hour prior to the birth of the Christ, this is a great labor in many ways, cosmically considered. Though the birth of the individual Christ takes place in Capricorn at the close of the Nida gestation period. Well, there's the individual Christ and the cosmic Christ. Sometimes the individual Christ is referred to as emerging in Virgo, but oftentimes literally in Capricorn. There is the crisis of the birth hour and the struggle to birth the new form occurs in Virgo, but the actual emergence takes place in Capricorn. Anyway, there's sometimes a little vagueness between the idea of whether birth occurs in Virgo or in Capricorn, certainly literally in Capricorn. So let's read this without my interference. Mercury, therefore, leads Aries to Virgo, again speaking symbolically, where the idea or word of God begins to take form, and consequently the latent life of Aries comes to the crisis of the birth hour, which is, you know, somewhat prolonged, prior to the birth of the Christ, cosmically considered. Now, that's interesting because the Christ is born cosmically in Aries. Aries is the ultimate sign of initiation. There will be a time when Capricorn, as the sign of initiation, is replaced by Aries. But Aries always has this broad ideational cosmic implication, not dealing with the specifics of form, but dealing with the formless idea. So, you know, what is the birth of the cosmic Christ? Well, what is the cosmic Christ? Is the cosmic Christ the solar logoic sun? Is the cosmic Christ Sirius from a certain perspective, as Sirius expresses probably ultimately a second ray monad? Is the cosmic Christ something greater still, a still greater constellation, perhaps Orion, as has sometimes been stated. The idea of cosmic Christ has many levels because, of course, we're dealing with the second aspect of divinity, and the cosmos is relatively a big place. So there's the cosmic Christ in terms of how humanity can consider it, and still greater cosmic Christs as we ascend through the hierarchy of beings. Aries related to the cosmic Christ, and the individual Christ related to Capricorn at the close of the Nida gestation period, and that gestation period is ruled by Virgo. And because we have the word here, the idea begins to take form. It begins to take form in Virgo and leads all the way to the crisis of the birth hour, which Virgo under Vulcan, Virgo under Vulcan is the birth process, the pushing part that Vulcan represents, and the emergence into a new world of form, which is technically ruled by Capricorn. Okay. Now he goes on to the third ruler, the hierarchical ruler of Aries, which is active in the life of initiates of the third degree. Some have said it's active earlier, some have connected the hierarchical ruler with the mental plane per se, but I think that the full expression of a hierarchical ruler in relation to any sign will occur when the individual is truly a member of hierarchy after the third degree, or around the third degree. Uranus embodies the energy of the seventh ray, presumably its soul ray, and its work is analogous to that of Mercury. Now, let us remember that Mercury and Uranus are very closely related planets, and that when Mercury, in its etheric and subtle aspect, is absorbed into a synthesizing planet, it will be ultimately Uranus into which Mercury is absorbed. We don't want this thing popping up. Okay. So Uranus embodies the energy of the seventh ray, and its work is analogous to that of Mercury. For the seventh ray is the ray which relates spirit and matter. See, the relational aspect of the seventh ray is analogous to the mediating function of Mercury. Relations which the seventh ray induces are not only vertical but also horizontal, and this is true of Mercury as well. And brings together, Uranus brings together, the seventh ray brings together electric fire and fire by friction, thus producing manifestation. So the seventh ray is very important in relating the father and the mother, which produces the sun of manifestation, which is the solar system when we're thinking in terms of the solar logos. There's so much embedded here. You know, we could take these statements as key thoughts and seed thoughts for meditation. The book Esoteric Astrology is a seed. It's a tremendously powerful seed for the unfoldment of the new astrology. And unless it's treated as a seed and all the different little seeds within the one seed are nurtured and germinated, we shall not have the full potential of this book. Memorizing the book will not do. One has to treat the various factors as indicative of lines of illumination which can be followed. So, Uranus and Mercury have an analogy. The seventh ray relates spirit and matter and brings together electric fire and fire by friction, producing manifestation. Uranus leads the soul, by that time it is a soul, to the burning ground, the final burning ground, really. Elsewhere it tells us, Uranus leads the soul to the burning ground, during the final stages of the path, when the fire of Aries and the fires engendered through the potency of Uranus produce the flaming heat of the burning ground. Now, is he talking about a number of burning grounds, one of which precedes each initiation? Or is he being very specific about the very final stages of the path, which will lead to the liberation of the soul, the complete liberation from the causal body, and later even from the spiritual triad? We can look at this then in a generic sense, that Uranus is bringing the spirit into expression. The spirit has a mighty, fiery power. And the final stages of the path could be considered simply what we call entry into the kingdom of God and the path of initiation, including even the first and second initiations of the threshold. In a way, Aries is bringing in the new age. Aries can also be considered to bring in the kingdom of the soul. We can think of it in that way, with Aries and Uranus applied to initiations 1 through 5 and maybe beyond. Or we can think of specific phases of liberation, the first of which would be the, I can think of the third initiation here, but that's not a true liberation. The fourth initiation will bring us a final burning ground. And even there is a burning ground before the fifth initiation, when the debris, the remains of the destroyed causal body, are burned away and complete revelation, unobscured, is granted to the consciousness of the initiate. He will then know much more of the purpose of Sanat Kumara. Uranus leads the soul to the burning ground during the final stages of the path, when the fire of Aries, all the fires, but electric fire particularly, if we're dealing with the really final stages, and the fires engendered through the potency of Uranus, and, you know, in one way I'd like to call these the fires of the inherent archetype. Because when what we really are, which Uranus represents, starts coming up against what we seem to be, and what others have told us that we are, and how we've been conditioned under Saturn, then a conflagration really arises. Because Uranus insists that the archetype be made manifest, and this will be in great friction with all that has been created and which is not authentic. So the fires which burn up that which is not authentic, because Uranus is the major planet of authenticity. Authenticity is archetypal. The archetype is the authentic part of ourselves. So it produces the flaming heat of the final burning ground. The final burning ground. Well, you know, it's hard for me to think of anything as a final burning ground, because there are all manner of subtle forms from which we must free ourselves. We must divest ourselves of these forms, and the agency of fire is necessary as we do so. So Uranus may be active in the very highest initiations, because Uranus is ruling, in a way, the very first plane, the sea of fire on the logoic plane. And there will be fires in those dimensions which liberate the consciousness from states which we would now consider extremely high, but which then are viewed as a limitation. Let's see, through this burning ground, the initiate has finally to pass. There's a lot of finality here. Uranus, remember, is God the Father in terms of the planetary lives. Uranus has the first ray monad. Uranus is an ultimate planet. Is it the ultimate synthesizing planet for our solar system, our solar logos at this time? Maybe, maybe not. I think in the next solar system, it certainly will be, but perhaps in this solar system, we might be able to look at Neptune as the ultimate synthesizing planet, since Neptune has a second ray monad, and since this is a second ray solar system in its soul and personality. Uranus rules the occult way, the true causes of things, the hidden realities. It is, let's call it access to the hidden realities. Access to the hidden realities. And when realities are hidden, we call them occulted. And that's really what occultism is. It's a study of the hidden realities. It has nothing to do with that which is evil or macabre or in some way against the goodness of God. It just deals with the revelation of what God is. God in its hidden aspect, which is most of God, God our planetary logos. Uranus rules the occult way and is, in an esoteric sense, connected with the Hierophant of the mysteries of initiation. So, when does the Hierophant appear, the true Hierophant? Well, even the first Hierophant, which is the great Lord, the Christ, will have a Uranian or awakening effect. You see, Uranus, the awakener, and the Hierophant, the awakener. But, A-W-A-K, awakener. Okay, but here we can be talking about Sanat Kumara as the true awakener at the third initiation, awakening the initiate to the realities of spirit. Remember that Sanat Kumara is a projection of our planetary logos who has a first ray monad. So in a way, Sanat Kumara and the planetary logos are the same being. So Uranus is somehow deeply connected with Sanat Kumara as he raises the initiate to life. This is first achieved at the third initiation when the spirit or life aspect comes somewhat into expression. So the electric fire of Uranus is very much involved with the third initiation, though not its full extent, of course. That would have to wait till later, and solar fire is more applied at the first two initiations. So Sanat Kumara, as the Hierophant of the mysteries of initiation, is connected with Uranus, the awakener, beginning at the third initiation, particularly when Sanat Kumara becomes the Hierophant. Before that, it is the Christ. The final burning ground, the occult way, these are very high things. This all has to do with the liberation of our consciousness from preoccupation with the realm of lower Saturn, namely the conditioned mosaic worlds, the lower 18 subplanes, and even from a solo logoic point of view, the lower 21 subplanes. Let's see how we're doing. Okay, rolling along here. Page 101. Therefore, we have, in relation to Aries and the life of the soul, which there comes into subjective manifestation. In other words, under Aries, the life of the soul emerges upon the mental plane, which is subjective when compared with the outer planes. Certain related signs, wherein the soul, in objective manifestation, passes through peculiar and definite crises. Esoteric astrology is very useful in helping us define the nature of the crises through which we are passing. Most human beings consider crisis simply as objectionable and unpleasant and something to be lived through as rapidly as possible, something to go beyond. But a crisis, truly understood, has a great revelatory significance, and we should emerge with greater consciousness after every crisis, and we will do so if we understand what the purpose of the crisis may be. Therefore, we have in relation to Aries and the life of the soul, which comes into subjective manifestation under Aries. I come forth, and from the plane of mind I rule. I come forth onto the plane of mind subjectively under the influence of Aries. Certain related signs wherein the soul, in objective manifestation, passes through peculiar and definite crises. Now, what is objective manifestation of the soul? The objective manifestation of the soul occurs under Cancer and on the dense physical plane. The dense physical plane. In other words, the lower three subplanes. We are manifesting through the lower three subplanes densely, and we manifest our etheric, emotional, and mental nature, and also our soul nature, through this density which is apparent to the five senses. Okay, so here are some crises, and it might be very valuable for students to collect the crises. So, let us collect the crises which Master DK mentions. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, there's a whole list of crises on what page? Oh, well, not quite there. I thought it was on page, Crisis, Battle, Field. Crisis Battlefield? Yes, there are the crises. Yes, I thought it was page 473. It's 472. So here's a list of crises that we will have to consider. Crises of the soul, of incarnation, of orientation, of initiation, of renunciation, of the battlefield, of the birthplace, of the burning ground, and so forth. He also mentions Capricorn, Libra, and is it Leo, as signs of crisis. I'm not sure about the Leo, but I do remember Capricorn and Libra. So we will attempt to collect these different signs of crisis, because crisis is opportunity. Every time we have a crisis, we have a chance to expand our consciousness and increase the potencies of the life aspect within us. So let us collect them and see the crisis or crises through which we are passing. As Master DK is telling us, if we don't have a crisis, we should be having one. And perhaps we can even force the issue and engineer our own crises. So that's, note on 472. The list of crises. And some of these will be found on that page, correct? The battlefield is one such, and that's the one we're going to discuss here. The crisis of the battlefield leading to the culminating battle in Scorpio and the liberation into life in Capricorn, the place of the higher initiations after the reversal of the wheel. So are there lower initiations before the reversal of the wheel? Let's ask. Are there lower initiations before the reversal of the wheel? In a way, there are. Even becoming a human being is a type of initiation. A Capricorn rules five initiations, and these five can be considered the first through the fifth, but perhaps it has a connection even with some of the higher initiations. The crisis of the battlefield is under Scorpio. What is the culminating battle in Scorpio? Well, for so many human beings, it's the a difficult moment at the second initiation, which DK says is the most difficult for human beings to take, especially if they're on the soft line rays, or if they're not on ray 3 or 5. The second initiation is the most difficult for people to take. But that's not the culminating battle. I would say the culminating battle, from a practical consideration, can be considered the fourth initiation. There's a kind of consummation out of the need to reincarnate at the fourth initiation, and the battle is between the initiate and that portion of the dweller of the human race which is ranged against him. So that is a culminating battle which leads to the end of that which seems to characterize humanity most, incarnation in a physical form, the need to reincarnate. But of course, even a master is still a human being, though a Chohan is not. And liberation into life. Well, the first ray comes through Capricorn. It does not, as listed, come through Scorpio, though one can suspect it. And life is most connected with the first aspect, although, in a way, spirit, soul, and matter are pervaded by life, so life seems to be something inclusive and not just related to the first ray, but of the three rays, the first ray seems most related to life. The liberation into Capricorn, the place of the higher initiations after the reversal of the wheel. The reversal of the wheel is occurring from the time we reach the fifth petal efforts within the egoic lotus, though the accomplished reversal of the wheel can be considered to occur after passing the temptations in the desert between the second and third initiations. And so from this perspective, Capricorn can be considered to rule initiations 3, 4, and 5, and maybe 6 and 7 as well, because following the achievement of the reversal of the wheel, when the issue is no longer being debated, and when there is no longer the possibility of reverting to the left-hand path, following all that, the third initiation comes. Capricorn certainly rules the third initiation. It is the initiation which is most characterized by the energy of Capricorn, just the way Scorpio, even though involved in the third initiation, is most characterizing of the second. So that's one crisis, the crisis of the battlefield. Now, all of this is related to Aries, because Aries is related via Mars to Scorpio. Now, we'll look at a crisis here connecting Aries to Virgo, because Mercury is related, is ruling in both signs. The crisis of the birthplace in Virgo, brought about through the activity of Mercury leading through Leo to the birth of the Christ in Capricorn. Well, it is said that the gestation and the nurturing of the Christ in the heart takes place in Virgo. It's hard to think of Virgo only as a sign of gestation. It is also a sign of motherhood, and there is no motherhood unless there is birth. So there is a whole birth dimension to Virgo. But in a way, we are born into matter. The idea, and the man is the idea, man is an idea, each one of us is an idea. The man is born onto the physical plane. Virgo was very active in the latter part of the previous solar system, which has much to do simply with matter and mind. The man is born onto the physical plane. He achieves a growing sense of his own individuality through Leo, but Leo also rules the first initiation in which the birth of the Christ occurs. So as that individuality in Leo becomes more spiritual, it leads eventually to the birth of the Christ in Capricorn, which is the first initiation. So if you have a horoscope in which Virgo, Leo, and Capricorn are all present, it's really indicates the potential for initiation. Leo and Capricorn together can indicate the first initiation, because so often the first initiation is taken in Leo or under Leo, and Capricorn is always associated with the first initiation. The birth of Christ from Mary, Virgo, occurred at the time of the winter solstice in Capricorn. We see how all these ideas are brought together. The self-conscious individual in Leo becomes the Christ-conscious initiate in Capricorn. Okay, that's over a long period of time. But it's also possible to become the increasingly self-conscious spiritual individuality who can take the first initiation in or under Leo. And Capricorn just confirms that. Also, the second initiation can be taken under Leo and Capricorn as well. Capricorn rules all the five first five initiations, and maybe initiation 3 to 7. DK does not discuss. Let's see. I think how does it go? He doesn't discuss the signs in which the higher initiations are taken. But let's go there for just a second. We'll go to a different. Go to a different book. We'll go to the Raised Initiations. And, gosh, what is it? Is it page 340? Something like that? Yes, it is. Okay. For these higher initiations, he does not discuss the sign involved. Initiation 5, though, since it is the fifth, may have very much to do with Leo. I think it does. Mastership, and Leo is the number 5. Initiation 6, which is the decision, is related to Libra and the third ray. When it comes to the second ray of resurrection, I oftentimes think that Aries, the major sign of resurrection, is connected with this initiation, which lifts us onto the highest of the subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, the logoic plane. So anyway, a study of the signs that correlate with various initiations would be most interesting, and we will find there's not only just one sign. We will find that a number of signs correlate, and when they are brought together, they really can indicate the potential for the initiation. Iconically, well, let's say Scorpio is connected with the second, and Capricorn with the third, and Leo, we are told, is connected with the first, but not to exclude Virgo and not to exclude Gemini and Scorpio. Well, there are just many different signs involved in that initiation. Okay, so let's see where we are. Yes, we are at the time when we have to discontinue this. We are talking about the crises. So I will say that this, whoops, what do we got going on here? This is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 46. And we have gone to page 101, I believe. Yes, we have. We've gone from page 99 to 101. At this rate, there will be about 350 tapes for this book. But let's hope that things get a little faster later, although I certainly can't promise it. Let us now, therefore, do the great invocation together. From the point of light within. Okay. Oh, that's not what we want. We want previously and okay. Okay, the great invocation. Om. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Friends, we will continue with number 47, and we are working on the relation of the constellation Aries to other signs in which crisis occurs, and we have discussed the crisis of the battlefield in Scorpio and the crisis of the birth hour in Virgo. We'll see what other crises await us. And page 472 is very good for indicating crises. Okay, we'll see you soon and continue our discussion. Bye for now.